Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When it comes to home insurance, Geico works for you. And since I'm the Geico Gecko, I work for you too.
Hey, Gecko, could you DJ my workout?
I got you, Derek. I know you like them sweet beats on leg day. Great home gym, by the way.
That's fire, Gecko.
I call this remix. Bundle your home and car insurance so you can save and get coverage that grows with you.
Oh, yeah. Rolls right off the tongue. And you know what else I like?
Air horn.
Aw, yeah.
Let Geico work for you. Get more with Geico.
Merkel Media.
Good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas from Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? I want to say thank you to everyone who has been going to Spotify and going to Apple Podcasts and hitting the follow button in addition to listening to the show. It's such a small thing to do, but it helps the show grow immensely. So for that, I want to say thank you. And if you haven't hit the follow button on Spotify or Apple, make sure you do that now. Also, if you've been a follower of the show and you haven't given it a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go do that now. And if you're on Apple, make sure you write a great review as well to go along with the 5 stars. That is another way to help the show grow and get deeper into the algorithm, which allows it to get to even more people. If you're new to the show, take a listen, and if you enjoy it, go give it a 5-star review immediately afterwards. We have just recently started Free the Rabbits merchandise with our Touchgrass shirts, rabbit logo tees and hats, Nephilim Portal Baby tees, and our new Puck Wudgie Tube shirts available in all sizes with several color options. Also, for the people who have been asking how they can donate to the show financially, we have several ways to do so. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits where we have monthly memberships, or you can give a one-time donation. If you are following on YouTube, we also have memberships there with different tiers, all of which have custom emojis you can use while on the channel. And if you can't donate financially, just you donating your time is the best gift possible to the show. And for that, thank you so much. Keep sharing the show, everyone. Now, let's get into it. What's good, guys? We are back with part 2 of the occult origins of the Men in Black. And when we left off last episode, I went into Alan Greenfield and I talked about a specific book that he wrote, The Secret Cipher of the UFOnauts or UFOnauts. And this was in 1987. And I said that this episode would draw from some of the things that he said. And just to give you a quick refresher, Alan Greenfield, and you may remember him if you watched the Hellier series, He's an American occultist writer and ceremonial magician, and he's well known for his significant contributions to various esoteric and occult traditions, including the Lima, Hermeticism, and Freemasonry. And he's one of the few people who have done some really deep dives on the Memphis Mizraim Rite, and this is a rite in Freemasonry that can take you to 99 degrees. Again, there are all kind of different houses that are within Freemasonry, and this is just one of the houses, but he does talk about that particular house specifically, and we talked a little bit about that on the last episode, but we're going to hop right in to some of the ideas that Greenfield, and we're definitely going to talk about some other people today too, but we're going to talk about the battle between the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge and the idea of these men in black and what they actually are. And again, back to what I said in the last episode, I don't think it's just one thing, and I don't think it's just one thing within the occult either. And we're going to explore that today and really take a look at what these men in black actually are. And then in part three, we're going to go a little bit further into that idea as well when we really break down the secret chiefs. And we're going to talk a little bit about some ciphers that let us know also where these men in black come from, or some gods in the past that they may be attributed to as well. So we're going to get into a whole lot in this three-part series. I'm really excited about it. I think it's definitely something that's a little bit different take on what these men in black are. But I do want to say again, before I get started, that I'm not throwing out the idea that the men in black are just human beings that are working for governments, because I do think that part exists. And again, I think that there are different versions, as we're going to explore today, even within the occult. So Greenfield does talk specifically about 1947 in his book, and he brings up that the CIA was actually organized in 1947 when all of these UFO cases were just rampant on the American scene. And I've said it a million times, 1947 was a very crucial year when it came to the rebranding of what these entities are. This is when the New Age really shifted from angels and interdimensional beings that are considered to be heavenly, that help us into moving them more into an extraterrestrial / interdimensional idea. And this is kind of where it started, was in 1947. And the CIA was in and of itself a rebranding in 1947. So during World War II, you had the Office of Strategic Services, which was the OSS, which was the precursor. And then it was abolished in 1945 by Harry S. Truman, which we've talked about Truman several times on the show because he just happens to be a part of this weird time period. And then he created the CIG, which was the Central Intelligence Group, and that was in 1946. And then as the Cold War started ramping up, then you had the National Security Act of 1947, and that established the CIA, and it was headed by the Director of Central Intelligence, which is the DCI. And by 1949, this is when the CIA was exempted from most congressional oversight. So this is a group who kind of does what it does on its own. And, you know, they're touted as doing some of these great things, but there's tons of controversies that have surrounded them. They've been involved with political assassinations, torture, domestic wiretapping, which I am going to do an episode on Project Echelon very soon. So get ready for that. And it's definitely going to involve a lot to do with the CIA and what they've been up to. But MKUltra, mind control techniques, all these different things that the CIA has been involved with, but we have to throw them in the loop as being a big part of this UFO push in the 1940s, specifically 1947, when it really skyrocketed, which, by the way, and I've said this several times on the show, Aleister Crowley died in 1947. And I probably will explore that more when I get back to the Aleister Crowley secret agent series that's ongoing. And I think that his death in 1947 wasn't an accident. And Alan Greenfield, who we're talking about today, also in this book suggests that. And it was interesting because I had been formulating that as I was really digging into all of the different mechanics of him being a secret agent. And that was something that I had discovered. And then when I went and read this book, that was one of the first things he talks about. So here's a guy who's a part of the OTO, a part of these different secret societies, who's deep into the occult, who's a part of that world, who also believes that Crowley was possibly taken out. And we're talking about the CIA here. We got to suggest that there was some sort of government agency that might have been involved with that. And you may ask, well, why would they have needed to off Crowley? Well, as Crowley got older, he talked a lot more about a lot of things he did, specifically being a secret agent. He got really loose with his mouth. And, you know, that's just what people do when they get older. I don't care. I'm just going to say what I want to say. And I think with 1947 being such a crucial, crucial year for moving us into this modern age with technology and these entities now being referred to as grays and aliens, that Crowley would have known exactly what these entities were. And if he had been around just a little bit longer, maybe there would have been something out of that that would have been exposed, that these groups behind the scenes wouldn't have wanted to get out, especially with Crowley in his latter years not really caring as much about what people thought. So again, that will be explored a lot deeper later on down the road when I get back to the ongoing Secret Agent Crowley series. So we're talking about what these men in black could actually be. We're just talking about Crowley. Well, we can't talk about Crowley without talking about Samuel Liddell Mathers. And I've talked about Mathers plenty of times. He's considered the father of the Golden Dawn. And as a matter of fact, Israel Regardi, who was one of Crowley's secretaries for a time, and he was deeply involved with studies on the Golden Dawn, and he actually said that the Golden Dawn was McGregor Mathers, was Samuel Liddell Mathers. So he was the embodiment of that organization. And I've talked about this before, but he wrote the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage. And that book, which spawned out into the Abramelin rituals, which Crowley eventually completed, but we talked about him being in Mexico, and he was trying to complete it while he was down in Mexico, along with the 30 Aethers of John Dee and Edward Kelly. But that particular ritual came from this translation that Samuel Liddell Mathers wrote, and this knowledge drove Crowley to expand his own magical expertise. And expanding Crowley's magical expertise, he also wrote many levers that spawned off from all of these different ideas and rituals that he was gleaning from other people, Samuel Liddell Mathers being one of them. Now, Crowley and Samuel Liddell Mathers had a huge falling out, to the point that when Crowley wrote his 1917 book, Moonchild, which was a quote-unquote, air quotes, fictional work, but he attributed different people in the book to people he actually knew. And as a matter of fact, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard used this fictional work to try to complete the Babylon Working in 1946, which is oddly a year before 1947, when all this crazy stuff starts happening. So I'm telling you, it's all connected. Once you start really looking at the occult aspect, the hidden knowledge aspect of what these magicians, these alchemists were doing behind the scenes, this is when you get a deeper viewpoint of the men in black, grays, UFOs, these things are not from another world in the sense of what they're being conveyed. Now, if we want to look at interplanetary or interdimensional, coming from another realm, I would suggest that those things come from those particular places. Now, I'm not ruling out the idea of extraterrestrial life. I've said that plenty of times on this show. I can hear the flat earthers screaming now. But regardless, when it comes to these particular type of entities, I think these are connected to fallen angels. They're connected to demonic entities. And specifically, when we're talking about a moon child or a homunculus, which we've talked about plenty of times on the show, and that is the insertion of a soul or what I think is a Nephilim spirit into a gestating fetus, which many different alchemists have talked about different ways of creating this homunculus. But in this book that Crowley writes, The Moon Child, he talks about that they are trying to save and improve the human race by creating this moon child. And they're doing it with a young woman named Lisa and Cyril Gray, who's a white magician, who's a part of the Great White Lodge. And this is another very prominent book where we see the battle between the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge, which, by the way, funny, Samuel Liddell McGregor Mathers is actually the primary villain in this book. And he goes by SRMD, and that's actually the abbreviation of Mathers' magical name. And he is the leader of the Black Lodge. So this gives you an idea of how these occultists operate. And I talked about on the last episode that Crowley considered him part of the Great White Lodge. He was in communion with the Great White Brotherhood or the Secret Chiefs, and he himself had elevated himself to Secret Chief status, which also Samuel Liddell Mathers had previously done. And interestingly enough, Crowley had to watch Samuel Liddell Mathers to try to figure out how to commune with the Secret Chiefs and how he could himself become a Secret Chief, which that happened later for Crowley after Mathers. Crowley even talked about, and I want to say maybe I've mentioned this before, but he even talked about that Mathers would set up a chessboard and he would see himself behind the white pieces and he would have an empty chair across from him and the black pieces would be what this secret chief would be moving. So according to Crowley, Samuel Liddell Mathers could see the secret chief sitting across from him and he would receive the information of where the secret chief wanted to move the chess piece and he would move the chess piece. Now, some people might argue that Samuel Liddell Mathers is crazy and he's just playing chess with himself, or he was playing mind games with Crowley to make Crowley think that he was talking to an entity across from him. You know how I do on the show? It could be all those possibilities. But at the same time, I can say that Mathers was far too involved in some very, very high-level alchemy for me to think that he was just making it up. Now, if he was doing it to mess with Crowley to throw him off the trail, then I would probably adhere to that more if we're going to say that what he was doing was a ruse. But I lean more to he probably was in contact with some sort of entity, and it was driving Crowley crazy to the point that even in Crowley's confessions, he said, and I quote, "As far as I was concerned, Mathers was my only link with the secret chiefs to whom I was pledged. I wrote to him offering to place myself and my fortune unreservedly at his disposal. If that meant giving up the Abra Mellon operation for the present, all right." So he's even willing at the time to give up the Abra Mellon ritual that he was trying to complete just to get to the secret chiefs, which Crowley ended up getting in contact with these entities later on, but this was when he was really doing battle with Samuel Liddell Mathers. And you may say, well, it seems to me like Samuel Liddell Mathers was also a part of this Great White Brotherhood or the Great White Lodge. And you would be right, because a lot of the occultists who consider themselves aligned with the Great White Lodge now say that Mathers had a turn to the Black Lodge. And they gather this information from Crowley. Now, I'm going to say this. Crowley is three things. And most people want to look at him as one of the three things. And most people that write biographies on him will do it on one specific. But I think Crowley was a multifaceted man. But three major things that I talk about is him being an alchemist slash occultist. I talk about him being a charlatan, which people who don't believe in the supernatural world, who have a very humanistic point of view, that's what they think Crowley was. He was a charlatan. He was tricking people. And I do think that that was a part of him. But that also leads into the third piece, which is him being a secret agent for British intelligence for years and years and years. And I would even go further and say that he was working for multiple agencies around the world. It wasn't just British intelligence, even though he adhered more to British intelligence than any of the rest. I think he just used the intelligence agencies to be able to, one, fund what he wanted to do in his magical practices, and two, it gave him the ability to do these things with no worry that he would get in trouble with any governments. I mean, if you think about it, Crowley never got in trouble, really, with anybody. He was just moving in and out of countries at will and doing what he wanted. Well, there's a reason for that. And that goes back to the whole secret agent piece. Those three pieces of Crowley, and I think there's probably more, but those are the three main pieces. I think they all coexisted together. And I think his relationship with Mathers, it soured. So then he just put him in the Black Lodge. And I think they're all in the same lodge, air quotes. So I don't think there's this good side of this and this bad side of this, like these occultists want to make out. I think they're all working for the same entities. However, I think these entities are also masquerading to these occultists differently. So yeah, they may represent what looks like these light beings, these light givers, light bringers, these quote unquote Lucifers. But on the other hand, you may have another group that's pushing out the imagery of being demons, demonic. So you may have groups that are doing black magic, which, by the way, Crowley was doing black magic too. So I don't know how he gets the pass. He shouldn't get the pass, but I know he's revered as the father of the modern occult movement. And that's why people really adhere to the things that he has to say. As a matter of fact, Crowley quotes, and we're talking about his relationship with Mathers. And he said, this is after Mathers was done with the Golden Dawn. And he said, Mathers, of course, carried on, but he had fallen. The secret chiefs cast him off. He fell into deplorable objection. Even his scholarship deserted him. He published nothing new and lived in sodden intoxication till death put an end to his long misery. He was a great man in his way. So Crowley gave him a little shout out there at the end, saying that when he fell hard and the secret chiefs pushed him away. It's possible that they were done with him because they didn't need him anymore. And maybe he was there really just to help Crowley in his early stages and get that good push. And once that happened, Crowley was the main one that they wanted to use. And Mathers really just fell off. But they attribute to the fact that he joined the Black Lodge and he left the Great White Lodge. And that's more or less where almost all modern occultists or occult researchers go with what happened to Mathers. And to even guide it further, Crowley even says, when he's talking about the Black Lodges, he says, what I am out to complain of is what I seriously believe to be an organized conspiracy of the Black Lodges to prevent people from thinking. Now, this is going to get us right into what is said that the Black Lodges actually represent. And we talked about this last episode, how that the Great White Lodge, as well as the Black Lodge, claim to be manipulating governments and manipulating all these different global control systems. However, the Great White Lodge claims that they are doing it the right way because they're so advanced, they're so ascended that they need to be able to help mankind who isn't. But then they say that the Black Lodge is trying to manipulate people, but for nefarious means. They're both trying to manipulate people, and they both claim they are. But one says they're doing it for good, and the other says they're doing it for bad. And I think they're both doing it for bad and selfish reasons. I don't think that either of them are good. But this is the ideology that's being pushed out when it comes to these two different lodges. And to get to Greenfield and what he thinks about the historical idea of the Great White Brotherhood, he says that a person or institution that's allied the Great White Brotherhood approaches a certain level of success, or they get some sort of transcendental knowledge. He says that something intervenes. And he believes that this something is defined as what we talked about last episode, the man in black, the men in black, the black lodges, or the black lodge. So this is where this is bringing it right around, where we can get it right back to that men in black. So he suggests that these men in black, they realize that someone that's connected with the Great White Brotherhood is reaching this level of ascension, that they're going to step in. And at this point, they're going to try to offer this person or institution an opportunity to join them, or they will go directly head-to-head in opposition. So Greenfield suggests that the Black Lodge needs to do this because they need to try to stop the White Lodge. This is duality at its finest. We're going to talk about dualism here in just a second. But he says that the Black Lodge is opposed by something else equally as strong, and they are afraid of something we might find out about them, about their opposition, about ourselves, or all three. So again, back to good magic versus bad magic. And this ties into dualism. And there's different types of dualism, obviously, but moral dualism is the belief of the great complement or conflict between the benevolent and the malevolent. So not all Gnosticism is under this umbrella. I mean, we could even consider that Christianity could be on an outlier, right, to moral dualism. The only issue is with Christianity, it would not be considered in a dualistic manner fully because good wins in the end, evil loses. Whereas in straight up dualism, there are two opposite forces and they're equally as strong and they're battling for us. Again, there's different types, but when you're looking at moral dualism, Mandeism, which I've talked about before on the show, and they believe in the world of light that is good and is contrasted with the world of darkness or the underworld that is evil. We talked about Manichaeism before on the show, and it's more representative of a dualistic and monist philosophy. And they believe the supreme and transcendental first principle from which the two equal but opposite entities emanate. So we've got this creation point, both evil and good spawn from this creation point. And this is why that they are on even playing field and why we are considered to be little pawns in this battle. Unless, guess what, guys? We can figure it out. We can become gods ourselves. We can definitely elevate ourselves to do this, according to Manny and the Manichaeans. And there are other Gnostic religions that you could throw in this umbrella too. The Bogomils, the Cathars. We've talked about the Cathars plenty of times on this show too. So they all really move into this idea of dualism. Now, there are other forms of dualism as well. You've got radical dualism, and that is more of a subset of the moral dualism, and Manichaeism comes into that. And they believe the coexistence, and we talked about realms of light and darkness that become embroiled in conflict, and it emanates into the chaoticness of the universe. So it's really the equality of good and evil. That's this constant struggle that just keeps going and keeps going. Then you've got your mitigated dualism, and they get into the idea that in some way, one principle is more inferior to the other. The Sethians, and they're one of the big ones that is like the Cathars. They believe that there is a being that created the material world, but that's a lesser being, the Demiurge. And then you've got this true God that works in this other realm that's really the real realm that we're trying to get to. We're stuck in a matrix. We're stuck in this prison world, according to the Sethians, the Cathars, many others. And this prison world that the Demiurge, or they suggest is Yahweh, is keeping us here, stuck here. And to get out of it, obviously, we have to become an ascended master ourselves to get past this Demiurge and be able to move on. And this is, all of this is very important, this dualistic nature, because this is literally where the idea of the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge, which is tied into the Men in Black, come from. So it goes right into Gnosticism. And it really is Gnosticism at its root core. Even before it was called Gnosticism, the idea of Gnosticism has been around forever. We could take this all the way back to Hermeticism, which ties back into Hermes Trismegistus. You know, people want to tie that into Enoch and all of these other characters. I don't think that Hermes Trismegistus and Enoch are the same person by any stretch at all, but this is what people think. I think more or less it's tied into the Egyptian god Thoth, and Thoth is definitely the giver of wisdom and knowledge, and this is really at the root core where I think for us in Adamic times, this is where the idea of this duality and this Gnostic viewpoint comes from. And to really be able to understand this transcendental realm that we're trying to get to, and Greenfield talks about this in the book, many other occultists have talked about this too, is understanding that according to the primal occult, and primal occult is tied more into primal magic, and if people don't know what primal magic is the type of magic that draws from the natural world. We're talking about elements like the earth, sky, sun, moon, the ocean. Think about the anime Avatar and the firebenders and the earthbenders and the waterbenders and the airbenders, right? Think about all of these different shows and cartoons and all these different ones that draw from the natural world. That's really what your primal magic is, primal occult. And according to this idea of the primal occult, the manifest universe emerges from an ultimate not thing. This is a consciousness or beingness beyond words of expressions. This ties into the unmanifest or limitless light. Now, the unmanifest can mean several things. It refers to something that's not yet manifest, not yet visible or apparent, or not yet in physical form. And that's just if you want to use the word for whatever. But then it also gets into what they call the absolute. And that's in these philosophical and spiritual traditions. It is equated with the absolute, the ultimate reality, the source of all existence, which is often described as formless and beyond human comprehension. And we could get into the prima materia and so many different alchemical terms when we're talking about that, but some consider that to be the monad or God or the essence of this ultimate God, not the demiurge, not Yahweh, not the evil God that's holding us down, that's not allowing us to become our true selves, not allowing us to do what thou wilt, which is the whole of the law. So for these alchemists and occultists, they will tell you that this unmanifest, which I just talked about, cannot be understood in an external sense. We're talking about primal occult. It can't be understood in this primal occult viewpoint. It's really going to have to come from occult magic, which taps into the power of the collective unconscious dreams, influence of beliefs, and the consensus of those beliefs. That's what you're going to have to draw from. But because it can't be understood in the external sense, it can be known in the Gnostic sense or Gnosis by the initiate perfected sentient being, the Übermensch. Because the Übermensch can be plugged into it. So this is going to get us into some more ideas about the Men in Black, right? So the Übermensch, or Overman or Superman, it was a concept in the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. And he talks about it in his 1883 book, Thus Spoke Zarathustra. And he talks about the character Zarathustra and how this character puts out this idea, this goal for humanity to set for itself to become the Ubermensch. As a matter of fact, the Ubermensch was a huge shift from Christian values, and it's supposedly grounded in more of a humanistic viewpoint, which I don't think is devoid of spirituality at all. The Ubermensch is not in the slightest. And I know Friedrich Nietzsche and nihilism and his battle against Christian morality is a tale that we could tell in a 6-part series. And I probably will do something on Nietzsche at some point, but it'll definitely be some sort of interesting place that I'll take it with Nietzsche. I don't want to rehash something that other people have done, but Nietzsche's the one that brings this idea of this Ubermensch to the forefront. Now, he may have presented it as devoid of spirituality, but I don't think in its essence it even is, because the Uber in German represents superiority, transcendence, excessiveness, or intensity. Mensch refers to human being, and it's not male specific, so it can mean female as well. It's just a superhuman, beyond human strength, out of proportion to humanity. So this ties into the ascended masters. This ties into becoming a secret chief. And we're not talking about the secret chiefs or the ascended masters, the Great White Brotherhood, that are not from here, because there are beings that are part of this group that are not from here. But you've got the ones that supposedly, again, I don't think they have, but supposedly ascend and become this Ubermensch, this Superman. And according to these occultists, that is the way that you're able to connect to this next level, these next realms, where you have now shed your earthly existence. And not totally, because you could talk about some of these occultists are able to astral travel or move to other realms while they're still alive here on Earth. So you've got that whole other aspect there too. And we could tie that right into Men in Black and Men in Black being able to slip in and out of existence. I mean, some people have talked about Men in Black being able to slip in and out of houses, you know, just appear in rooms. So I think that we have to put the idea of the Ubermensch at least somewhat into the idea of the Men in Black, because again, Men in Black's an umbrella term. It could mean a lot of different things. So are these people who are able to astral project? Is that why sometimes they seem very translucent, transparent? Maybe they are actual people who are astral projecting in front of someone, able to manifest physically in this astral projection. I'm just throwing some ideas out there because of how these occultists view the Ubermensch. And if we're going to tie the Men in Black into the Black Lodge and into black magic, well, we have to throw this out there also as this Ubermensch being a version of the Men in Black too. So as we're looking deeper into the Ubermensch and the way that we can become an ascended master and speak to these higher intelligences, and we look at the Gnostic viewpoint that God, devils, demons, angels, extraterrestrials now are from this realm of the ultimate, right? What we were just talking about, the absolute, the unmanifest. This is where these beings are emanating from. They're emanating from this material, this prima material, even the Azoth, you know, so many different names we could use for that. But because they are, and the ancient Gnostics saw God and the devil of conventional theology as ego-maddened entity under the delusion that it indeed is the ultimate being. So God or Yahweh believes he is the ultimate being. And many occultists have talked about this even in more modern fictional literature. So Philip K. Dick, and he was an American science fiction writer and novelist, wrote 44 novels, about 121 short stories. You know, I've talked about him before. He wrote The Man in the High Castle. He wrote A Scanner Darkly. he's had tons of films based on his works, Blade Runner, Minority Report. Well, one of the books that he wrote in 1981 was VALIS. Now, VALIS stands for Vast Active Living Intelligent System. And this was his version of the Demiurge. And he actually really wrestled during his literary career. And he had a secret life as a Christian Gnostic philosopher. And he battled with the fact whether he thought that VALIS was benevolent or this Yahweh was a machine-like deity or an insane extraterrestrial supercomputer. So he could never figure it out. And this is what happens when you're chasing this secret knowledge, chasing what these entities want to tell you. And instead of trusting the path that you should be on, trusting the path that Yahweh, the real Yahweh, the one true God, not this monad, not these fake gods, but Yahweh, who created it all, the material, the immaterial, everything. This is what happens when you step outside of that and you start listening to these other entities and angels, which all of these occultists have their HGAs, their holy guardian angels, who tell them these knowledges. How do you know if they're who they say they are? This is what I've said on the show from the beginning. There's people that say they've talked to Jesus, but then this Jesus starts giving them knowledges and giving them paths that have nothing to do with scripture. But people believe it because they're talking to this entity, and this entity is showing them support, showing them love, giving them power, giving them access.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
And this is what Philip K. Dick was trying to figure out his whole life. He wrote this book on VALIS, and VALIS is this version of the Demiurge. And it kind of made me think a little bit when we're talking about VALIS of VVVVV. And I talked about that during the MK Ultra portion of the Crowley Secret Agent series and how that Crowley's VVVVV was an actual praetor human, very similar to Iwas, and considered to be the head of the AA, which some people think that was Iwas, which was his HCA. Some people say it's VVVVV. Some people think VVVV is actually Iwas too. It could be. He's a messianic figure, and he is a Mahatma and ascended master. So regardless of how you want to look at it, it kind of made me think of that. And it kind of made me think of this being who's the head of this group, but it's the good group. Oh, it's not the Demiurge. This one's trying to help us get out. But honestly, I think it's the same thing. It could even be the same being masquerading as different beings, which I think they do too. And this is where I think the slippery slope comes when people are trying to find out these hidden knowledges that are literally at our own detriment. And to that point, Greenfield even talks about ancient Gnostics uncovering a cipher, which indicates that the story of the Garden of Eden in its conventional form isn't correct. And you're going to hear this a lot in Gnostics, that it's reversed. It's always reversed. It's always reversed because it can't be as simple as what the Bible says. Oh, it's got to be something secret and it can't be what it actually is. So according to these Gnostics, these ancient Gnostics who uncovered this cipher, the serpent is clearly the symbol of knowledge, wisdom, kundalini, yogic force, which, by the way, I've talked about yoga on this show before. Just know if you're doing yoga, it is deeply entrenched into these occult practices. And the movements that you're doing are all built by these alchemists and occultists, and they are opening up your body, inviting entities in. I'm just going to throw that out there. I know people don't like to hear that because they think yoga is just some sort of stretching and getting your body in tune with the world, so to speak. But there's actually so much more to it, to the point that Crowley's magical son, C.S. Jones, was teaching yoga as a part of him also teaching Thelema and inviting people to become a part of what they were trying to create in Detroit, the OTO chapter. So these guys are heavily involved with all of these nefarious practices, and they put yoga right in the mix. So just know that. Just know if you're doing it, just know where it comes from. And I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just letting you know at the root core of where it originated from. Take it for what you will. So this serpent is connected to good, right? Wisdom, knowledge. But then you have these jealous gods, which, here we go, Yahweh and all these other ancient evil gods. And according to these manuscripts, they're clearly the forces of blockage, self-denial, and repression. So this is where they get that idea of, if you're trying to repress people's sexuality, repress people's sinful desires, that this is wrong. You're supposed to be willy-nilly, do whatever you want, because that's where the true wisdom comes from, the serpent. And the intelligences, these jealous gods, govern the Black Lodge. So the Black Lodge has been around since the beginning of time. Again, the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge are not just consisted of human beings. These lodges have been around since the dawn of time. They've just been ran by entities. And this is what they've done throughout time, brought human beings in. And this Black Lodge brings in these human leaders, and they call them Black Brothers. And they aren't just Black magicians, because Crowley even said that the Black magician or sorcerer is hardly even a distant cousin of the Black Brother. So just so you know, the Black Brother is far beyond, as far as an adept goes, than what you would consider someone who's a Black magician or involved in or dabbling in the Black arts. So when you reach this level of Black Brotherhood and the Black Lodge, this could be another form of the Men in Black, right? They are actual human beings who have these supernatural powers, and they're able to perform feats that would be tied right into what is talked about from Friedrich Nietzsche, the Übermensch, or the Overman, or the Superman. So again, I don't think that term is solely connected to transhumanism and us building up some sort of physicality that's superhuman. I think that's a part of it, but I do think there's this other part of it, that the Übermensch represents a spiritual power that we can also achieve, that would give us here on Earth limitless power, at least in our finite minds. So we have to look at the Übermensch as more than just a super soldier. However, I think there's definitely a section of the Übermensch that would be a part of that, but I think there's this whole other spiritual side that we also have to look at, and I think that may be where we also get some of these Men in Black type of characters. And if we want to lend to some of them being human beings, well, maybe they are human beings that are spiritual Übermensches, and we have to look at the possibility there. Because again, when we start tying in the occult into the governments, into ufology, and all of these ideas, well, then it's just free game, because we have to pretty much open our minds up to whatever is possible at that point. And a lot of times, too, when we talked about this a little bit ago, that some of these Black Brothers are actually very high up adepts in the Great White Brotherhood. They would be considered a human version of the Secret Chiefs, a human version of Ascended Masters. They have reached this level, but then they've been seduced by the, for lack of a better word, the dark side. And they've been brought over, but they're already at this power level. So when they've been brought over to the Black Lodge, then they're able to do all these things. But according to the people who are a part of the Great White Lodge, they're doing it in a negative way. But again, back to what I said, it's all negative in my opinion. And this lends to the idea that the Black Lodge is tied directly into the Illuminati, the negative aspects of Freemasonry, any sort of fraternal organization that is trying to rule the world by keeping us enslaved. And this is what the Black Lodge is at its root core. And this is why it's tied into the Men in Black, because they are connected to these governmental organizations. And in the 18th century, the Black Lodge normally operated along Masonic lines, very similar to what the Great White Brotherhood would also do. And they mirrored them in a lot of ways. So that's how they were able to integrate in to places where people who were part of the Great White Brotherhood or the Great White Lodge, where they would butt heads a lot, because they would be in the same spheres trying to accomplish different goals, different ends to those goals, but they would need similar things. And that ties right back into Moonchild and the idea that this child would be the savior, and how you've got the Black Lodge trying to stop it, the Great White Lodge trying to make it happen. And this is the eternal battle, but it goes right back to duality from the beginning. It's just Gnosticism at its root core. So in the late 1800s, 1890s, you had a resurgence of the Great White Brotherhood. And this is important because we're going to tie this into Germany and definitely into Adolf here in a second, and how that's considered a huge part of the Black Lodge. But then we've got this White Lodge, and they have this resurgence. And in the 1890s, this is when the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and the Universal Gnostic Church were created. Well, this is interesting. During that time, in 1897, all of those fraternal organizations being created and this resurgence in the Great White Brotherhood also coincided with the Great Airship Scare. And if you don't know what the Great Airship Scare is, it's like the precursor to Roswell. It's kind of the first introduction in the U.S. that was massive enough for people to really talk about UFOs. They didn't even know what to call them back then. So the Great Airship Scare, it was a phenomenon that thousands of people across the United States claimed to have observed from 1896 through mid-1897. So at nighttime, they would see unidentified flying lights. They would see actual airborne craft similar to airships, but they didn't look quite like anything that we had currently. They would even see extraterrestrials piloting what looked like flying saucers. I saw some drawings of some stuff. It's pretty wild looking. It's very interesting, though, that tons of people were seeing this. As a matter of fact, the alleged airship crewmen and pilots usually described these beings as humanoid, and then sometimes they claim to be from Mars, which is also really interesting too. Now, I will say this, that some of this could have been test piloting aircraft that was behind the scenes, but I would even suggest to go as far as aircraft behind the scenes that we were working with entities to push. So even though 1947 was the big boom when it comes to technology and UFOs, this to me, in my opinion, was kind of the test run, was this 1896 to 1897 in California, where people were just seeing lights, groups of lights moving across the night sky. They said that beings in there looked human, but they didn't look quite right. And obviously some of them, when they interacted with people, said they were from the planet Mars, which I think that's super interesting too. What's really crazy is it was really swept under the rug. The newspapers laughed at people. They didn't even take it serious. But the crazy thing about it is from 1896 to 97, 100,000 people plus saw these. So there's no way that 100,000 people plus were lying about seeing something. This entire kind of precursor to Roswell, precursor to all these other big UFO events that happened in the mid-1940s, specifically 1947, this was happening while the Great White Lodge was having a massive resurgence with the Golden Dawn being created. And I think there's a massive correlation there, because anytime we see this big surge in the occult, especially the occult being connected to governments, or at least behind the scenes, we see this interaction with some sort of entity, some sort of beings. And we can go all the way back to the beginning of what we know of the world, at least in endemic times, where this has happened from then all the way to now, just rebranding. And I think this late 1890s Great Airship Scare was definitely what I would consider a test run for what was to come. But I do think it was connected to spiritual beings and our connection to them behind the scenes. So to get a little bit further into what I was already suggesting with Adolf and the Nazis and even pre-Nazis and these manifestations of the Black Lodge or the Black Order, we have to talk about the Vril Society and the Thule Group, which I've talked about on this show before. And we'll revisit a little bit, but go back to the episode I did about REM cloning, and you can hear me talk a little bit further into the Vril Society and Thule Group. So this Vril Society and the Thule Group is tied directly into what's considered the Black Lodge. That was tied into the pre-Nazi and the Nazi era. And this is talked about specifically in The Morning of the Magicians. And this was Jacques Berger and Louise Powles. And they go pretty deep into what the Vril are, what the Vril Society is, what their connections were to Nazi Germany. And this is what the occultists who consider themselves to be on the Great White Lodge side say is the Black Lodge, right? I also think it's a little bit of revisionist history from the modern occultists, because they want to distance themselves from this racial element. But the racial element was there from the beginning, even in theosophy. So this idea of eugenics has been through this from the beginning. And I talked about that in the episode I did on the evil origins of Star Children. And that's a big part that is hidden and tucked away within this whole thing. But again, you're going to hear the modern occultists who consider themselves to be the good magicians. They try to alleviate themselves away from this, but you can't. And I'm going to show you how you can't too. At least one example of why it'd be very tough for you to be able to just say, oh, that was the Black Lodge. They were involved with the Nazis and we weren't involved with that. That was just some evilness that Hitler was trying to do, working with the Thule Society and the Vril Society. Jacques Berger and Louise Powles connected in their book, The Morning of the Magicians, the Thule Society to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. So William Wynne Westcott, William Robert Woodman, Samuel Del Mathers, the founders of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, are connected, according to Jacques Berger and Louise Powles, to the Thule Society, which is connected to the Vril Society, and this is all connected to the Black Lodge. So tell me how that the Golden Dawn is considered to be part of the Great White Lodge, the Great White Brotherhood, the secret chiefs, but on the other hand, they are in close contact with the Thule Society and the Vril Society. It doesn't add up. And you're going to see these connections behind the scenes with these groups consistently. Now, modern occultists will give you explanations for that. They'll probably even say that, oh, yeah, well, you know, we had our own secret agents. We had our own double agents that were working and connecting. We got to keep our tabs on the Black Lodge because we got to stop these evil overlords from not allowing us to live our full lives, which they completely connect Christianity, by the way, into the Black Lodge too, because Christianity is something that holds us down, according to them. It's not allowing us to live our complete full lives. It's not allowing us to do what thou wilt. It's putting us in handcuffs. This goes all the way back to the garden. We just talked about the serpent being good and then God being bad, which is such a wild way to think about things. But this is what they believe. And to look even further into the Black Lodge and the Thule Group, the last known member of the Thule Group was Rudolf Hess. And Rudolf Hess was a German politician, convicted war criminal, and leading member of the Nazi Party in Germany. And he was appointed Deputy Führer to Adolf in 1933, and he held that position until 1941. And that's when he flew to Scotland, and he was trying to negotiate with the United Kingdom's exit from the Second World War. But he was taken prisoner and eventually convicted of his crimes against peace, and he served a life sentence until he committed suicide in 1987. So Rudolf Hess is the last known member of the Thule Society, the Black Lodge at the time. And he said that General Karl Haushofer, who was a German general, professor, geographer, and diplomat, and he influenced the ideological development of Adolf Hitler. And Hess was also a student of Haushofer. And during Hess and Hitler's incarceration, he used to visit Landensberg prison to teach and mentor them both. Rudolf Hess said that Karl was the magician, the secret master of Nazi Germany. And he said that up until he died. He basically said that he was an ascended master. He was a secret chief, clearly on the negative side, this Black Lodge side. And this, according to the good white magicians of the Great White Lodge, these people were evil. But it's funny, the people who are on the Black Lodge side claim that their side's actually good and the other side's evil. Tale as old as time. Now, you may ask, what is the ultimate goal of the Black Brothers, the Black Lodge, right? If they're opposing the Great White Lodge, what is it? Well, according to these occultists, they said it is to delay the manifestation of the new Aeon, the birth of the magical child, Homunculus, the moon child, and the realization of the Übermensch through diversion of the will current into less than useful power plays, demoralizing materialist and superstitious delusions, new age jargon, etc. So it's funny, the real initiates look at a lot of the new age stuff as a bunch of BS. It's just like low entry level. Doesn't even mean anything. But you notice what I said too, that superstitious delusions is brought in there. Christianity to them is considered superstitious delusions. And that's attributed to the Black Lodge because they think that the Black Lodge uses Christianity to subjugate people, religion in general to subjugate people, which I'm not against the idea that religion is used in many cases to subjugate people. But I think true Christianity is core, not Gnostic Christianity, but Christianity at its core is our foundational tenets to build a better world. It's what the world was built on in the first place. So again, back to White Lodge, Black Lodge, both are equally as caught up in their delusions as each other are. And what's interesting too, during this battle between the White Lodge and the Black Lodge, specifically during World War II, Crowley claimed that he advocated the use of two magical signs, which was to boost British morale, and actually Winston Churchill also used them. He used the V sign, which we can tie that into what we were just talking about on the bloodlines of Jesus, the cliff V, which is the feminine Suthema. And Suthema means a symbolic harmonic token, and it represents the matrix or the alchemical rosa, the V, which is considered the chalice or the womb of the female. And it's interesting that Crowley used that as a counter to the swastika. And he also used the thumbs up, which was the sign of the phallus, for victory. And he published these in pamphlets in 1940. So I also thought this was interesting that Crowley was using the V sign as a counter to the swastika. And I thought about the cliff V, But then it brought me into the Men in Black again. And we talk about these Men in Black showing up with the Eye in the Pyramid, which is a triangle, which can also be considered a three-sided V. And I'm going a little bit deeper, definitely getting to speculative arenas. And I try to tell you guys that when it's me theorizing myself. But I'm looking at this information. We know the 1947 happens. We know that now we have connection to these grays. From then on, we know that there are people who have gone through all kinds of abductions. Whether that was brokered behind the scenes with governments, I mean, there's plenty of stories. You know, we can get into the Majestic 12, all these different machinations behind the scenes, but they're getting access to men and women, specifically women in this case, because we're talking about the Cliff V, and they are bearing these extraterrestrial children, which I am suggesting that these women, and I've suggested this from the get-go, that it's not extraterrestrial children. These are children of the fallen. And this Clip V, when the Men in Black are rocking this Eye in the Pyramid and they are showing up to silence people or showing up to facilitate something happening because they've been seen with UFOs and aliens, all the like, that they are signifying that they are taking women as vessels to procreate and create either these moon children or these hybrids. And I think if we look at it thoroughly through the lens of the white and black lodges and what these occults believe, I think that when we tie in the modern UFO movement and what these men in black are trying to help facilitate, I think at the root core, we have to look at that as a big piece of it, especially when we're talking about moon children and the homunculus and how those are created and why they would need the womb to be able to do so. Now, we know Paracelsus talks about the cow's womb. Well, we don't need to do that. We got women that we can take and we can create moon children with them, i.e. even the way Crowley talked about it in not only Libra 367, De Homunculo of the Homunculus, but even in his book, Moonchild. So I'm looking even deeper when we're talking about the Men in Black and what their real reason for silencing people or just being on the scene. And if we're going to suggest that they're in this secret chief realm of the Black Lodge, then we have to look at them helping to push this idea of the one, the chosen one, the one moon child that's going to be the one to bring in the new aeon, the Antichrist, even as Crowley talked about. So we definitely have to look at this as a real possibility. And I'm going to end this episode on Crowley explaining the magic of the Black Lodge and how it can be defined and how it's identified in only one way, the subversion of the true will. And Crowley says, and I quote, "The magical will is in essence twofold, for it presupposes a beginning and an end. To will be a thing is to admit you are not that thing. Hence, to will anything but the supreme thing is to wander still further from it. Any will but that to give up the self to the beloved is black magic." So he's explaining what black magic is here and how that when you give up your will, then you are now going down the road of black magic, the Black Lodge. "Yet the surrender is so simple an act that to our complex minds it is the most difficult of all acts, and hence training is necessary." So he's saying that you need to train yourself so you don't get seduced by the Black Lodge. "The majority of the people in the world are ataxic. They cannot coordinate their mental muscles to make a purposed movement." That's the arrogance of Crowley. And I always say this too. I find it very interesting how Gnostics operate, or even the ones that operate on this great white brotherhood side, the great white lodge side, they're still all arrogant. There's a certain arrogance in having knowledge that you believe that you have that no one else has. As much as the concept is to shed the ego down to the point that you can get past the demiurge, I don't see how these guys are. I don't think you are. Well, one, I don't believe in the demiurge anyway, but you're not, because they're super arrogant, super over the top in the sense of what they think they have that you don't. Both sides admit that they're controlling the world behind the scenes, but one side just says it's doing it for the good of mankind, and they claim the other side's not, which then the other side says they're doing it for the best for mankind, but then the other side's not. Endless loop. Curley says they have no real will, only a set of wishes, many of which contradict others. And at the end of life, the movements cancel out each other. Well, I think the houses, the lodges cancel out each other because they're doing the same thing. This was Crowley explaining how someone goes down the rabbit hole of the Black Lodge. And this ties into the idea of the Men in Black. You know, what are they? And I think that not only could they be these entities, and we talked about several suggestions of what these entities could be in the last episode, but also the idea of the Übermensch, like to coin a term, the spiritual Übermensch, not just this physical super soldier, but this spiritual Übermensch. You can perform feats using what we would consider magic or alchemy. And I think that we have to look at that as a part of the whole as well. Now, next episode, we're really going to dig into the secret chiefs, and we're going to look at some ciphers, and we're going to tie those into the Men in Black as well. And we're going to look at the Great White Brotherhood and what they think these ascended masters really are. We're going to go really deep on the secret chiefs. And I haven't gone this deep on the secret chiefs yet. I've talked about them plenty of times, but really going to get into how they connect to ufology, how they connect to the Men in Black and what that means. Guys, I really appreciate you sticking around this week. This was a fun episode. I'm really looking forward to wrapping it up next week, because I think you guys are really going to enjoy where this is going to go. I'm hoping that this is a different look at the Men in Black and what they actually are, considering the fact that when most people run into them, they don't seem quite human. And I am looking at different possibilities of what they could be. Again, I don't think they're all one thing. So throw the Men in Black in there with Dogman, Bigfoot, and these cryptids where it's not just one thing. But again, thank you so much, guys. If you can right now, go give me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Write a review if you're on Apple Podcasts. If you got access to both, give me 5 stars on both. It helps the show grow, guys. I can't express enough how much it helps it get deeper into the algorithm and how it gets out to other people who haven't heard the show, who don't know what this is about. But for all the people that have already, I thank you so much. Also, don't forget, you can go to freetherabbits.myshopify.com, and I've got new merchandise up there now. Go check it out, order it, represent the show. That way, when somebody asks what that means, you can tell them and you can point them directly to the show. On the way out, we're going to play my brand new single from the new film that I was a part of called The Meadow Project. The song is called Imposter. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
Mirrored illusions, I'm in a fun house. Locked in a boxcar with all of these clowns. Don't feel like I belong, but maybe I do. Cause when I look in the puddle, maybe I'm just a ruse. Pyramids.
it's a deception above the halls of a minty. If I leave, will I even miss me? Yeah. Face to face with my ambition, yeah. My position with me, I'm in competition, yeah. I could be superstitious, cause it feels like it's a sickness. What you see is not what I see.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.